Hello and welcome back to Even More News, the first and only news podcast. My name is Katie Stoll.
That couldn't be more right. Hello, yeah. Katie Stoll. My name is not, well, similar, I guess. Hi, I'm Cody.
Hi, Cody. Johnston is the last name. Johnston is his last name of him. And joining us today for the very first time is comedian, writer, host of the new podcast, I'm Sorry, Mohanad Elshaky.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. I wanted to have you on for a while. I've been following you on Twitter. And this is great. This is finally happening.
Finally happening.
Finally happening. Yeah. Since you're new here, you might not be familiar, but we traditionally start every episode by honoring the holiday that we currently are celebrating, experiencing, or should be celebrating, because there's just, quite frankly, not enough holidial awareness. I said it.
I will
stand by that. Please don't let that be a word that I don't know the definition of that's truly atrocious. Today, September 2nd, is World Coconut Day. Let's hear it for the coconuts. How do you feel about coconut?
I'm just so happy to hear someone finally has a holiday for it.
Yeah.
I'm an advocate. Yeah. I'm an advocate
Are
for
you?
It. I mean, yes, even in my bio, it said it right there, the first line, Mohanad Elshaky, comedian and coconut advocate.
It really does say it right there.
Looking at it right now.
Yeah, I mean, you guys should have done some research, I guess.
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah. It's okay, you know. The good work sometimes goes unnoticed, and I'm used to that.
I am going to surprise and polarize our listeners and say I am not in Camp Coconut. And you, I guess.
I'm not a fan.
Look, I've come around to some coconut in like a smoothie, but I can't.
Okay.
I cannot enjoy coconut water.
It's very overpowering.
Foul to me.
I agree. No, I like the flavor too. No, I like the flavor. I don't like to drink it. You know, like
yes.
If it's part of something, then yes. But I would never take one and just, you know,
put a straw in it.
Exactly. Mm. No. Absolutely.
Well, that leads me to the next holiday we're highlighting today, which is National Lazy Moms Day. Celebrate being a lazy mom by taking a coconut and sticking a straw in it. I don't know. I did this on the fly. Cody rolled his eyes. I hate that lazy mom's day. Well, actually, just let mom. It's called Mother's Day. Let her have the day off.
There we go.
Exactly.
If we have two Mother's Day, that's fine. But we don't need to use any sort of negative language unless this is about reclaiming the word lazy as a celebration of self-care, which
I'm not
still
sure.
Have notes on.
It might be a day where moms are allowed to be lazy, or
yeah,
is
that's
it a
Mother's
day celebrating
day.
Just moms who already are lazy.
I see.
Well,
so like if you're
either
lazy,
way,
if
take
you're
a coconut.
Lazy mom all year round, then you're celebrated on Lazy Mom's Day. If you're just a regular mom, and you need a lazy day, that's Mother's Day. Is that
you know what? I'm gonna cancel this holiday.
Please do.
Yeah, it's done. Here
it's
you go.
It's done.
Yeah,
Lazy Mom's Day is over. Party. Spoiler alert, this is an ad for Skillshare, so thanks to Skillshare for supporting Even More News. Do something today that you couldn't do yesterday, or do something better today that you couldn't do quite as good as today, yesterday. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/more news and get a free trial of premium membership.
Before we go down the dark and twisted path, which is this week's news, I just want to take a minute to say hello, welcome, how are you? What's been going on? How you feeling? How's the pandemic treating you? You can answer any or none of these questions if you want. I'm just trying to make you feel welcome.
thank you so much. I mean, the pandemic has been fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, just enjoying being here in New York City. Nothing is happening weather-wise. Very normal. Just, you know.
Yeah, you guys had quite a night last night. We're going to talk about that a little later, too.
Yeah, it was something. I did not leave the house at all. I'm not going to be like, yes, I was stuck somewhere. I'm like, nope. I like, even if I see like something like in the weather app just being like, hey, it might be not that good outside. I'm like, cool, cancel all plans. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So you just watch it from your window?
Absolutely. The way that it's meant to be watched. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just watching climate change and be like, yeah, maybe this will affect me someday, very soon, probably. Yes.
I think about it all the time. Again, we're going to talk about this later, so I shouldn't spend all my best material. But I think it's been on one of these shows, unless it's just anecdotally that I've been saying this. I've truly had several conversations with myself where I've like come to terms that sooner or later the climate's going to get me. Like, yeah. Or that it's a very real possibility anyway. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's a fun, nice light note to start off with.
I mean, it's definitely going to get you. Like, other people probably not. It's just coming after you.
Oh, it's coming after me specifically. This isn't a dire warning for everybody. It's just there's this cloud that's been following me for years, and it's starting to, like, grow. I know it's coming for me. All right, so your pandemic's been great, but you stayed warm last night. Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, having the time of my life.
Well, I guess we should get started on the news. I want to hear all about your news podcast at the end when people are likely to remember it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you have a news podcast, but I meant new podcast.
Yeah, it's a new podcast that has to do with the news, but like not, you know, like...
Yeah,
Afghanistan and all of that. Yeah, because no one is apologizing for that, so it's not going to be included on my podcast.
Perfect. Speaking of that, Jonathan, I'm going to throw to you for broken news.
We're going to break the news.
We're going to break the news. It's broken.
As usual, there's tons of broken news this week. Yeah, Some More News had a big Afghanistan episode this week.
There did.
It was a chunky one. I learned a lot.
I love describing one of our videos as chunky because that's mostly just how I was described as a child. And I like it being repurposed here. Mm-hmm. So
no, it was a delightfully big-boned episode. I'm glad I watched it. It was, you know, depressing and enraging.
And big-boned.
As usual, but there are a few Afghanistan things we should still tack on to it. The deep dives are never deep enough. So on our way out of Afghanistan, we left for good. On Sunday, at least in terms of U.S. soldiers. But we...
Drones
we,
not leaving for good.
Not our robotic drones, yes.
Right. And we, you know, killed some people on our way out, probably. So there's a 38-year-old nonprofit worker named Zamari Ahmadi. He works for an organization called Nutrition and Education International. He drove some of their employees back and forth. To work. He delivered food for refugees, and as he arrived home on Sunday, his family says that his car was struck and 10 people were killed, including 7 children. The Pentagon says it was targeting a vehicle connected to ISIS-K carrying explosives that was presenting an imminent threat to U.S. military operations, evacuating people at the airport. The Pentagon says they are looking into this allegation. There's been no.
So I'm confused. His car is the one that was blown up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Zamari Ahmadi's car was struck, the Pentagon would say, I guess, by something. They're saying, no, this is what the drone strike was doing, was blowing up this guy who had nothing to do with ISIS-K, who was just coming home to his family. The Pentagon says it does not have a reason to doubt that Ahmadi's car is the one blown up, but it still is insisting that if anyone died, it was because of explosives that were in the car.
That's shady as fuck.
Yeah, so that's why I have to say that we probably blew some people up on the way out. And that's all we've got. The Pentagon is conducting its own investigation. The New York Times wrote about this and was unable to independently confirm, like, oh yeah, we screwed up. This was a drone hit on this guy. You know, it's just awful in every conceivable way.
Not much to add to that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'll say that none of this surprises me by any means. It's classic. Before moving to the US, I've lived in Libya and until 2014. And when the US military does something like this, I'm like, yeah, sure. That's normal business.
Right.
It's
I bet
how,
that's a perspective that you have that we definitely don't. Well, we're starting to now as people pay better attention, but
exactly. Yeah.
To who we really are.
Exactly.
It's very hard talking about this and feeling so powerless and frustrated. And the news keeps going. And we talk about it for a day and we move on. It's a common theme.
Yeah. And, you know, this is just one story and one family affected. But I think it's worth, like, paying attention to. Like, this is just, these are other people suffering who didn't have to. And it's just, one piece of the humanitarian crisis.
I mean, exactly. There's a huge humanitarian crisis that's now unfolding in the wake of this.
I think my main issue with it, honestly, like, obviously, like, you know, like, we all, like, feel helpless. And, like, what is it that I can do to... That what gets me is the people who try to justify it and, like, insert context to it. Because I remember, like, I read it like a family of 10, like 10 people have died and had nothing to do with ISIS and all of that. And I was, like, reading the replies under it. And someone was just like, okay, let me add some context here. And I'm just like, I don't want to hear it. Like, what context justifies people being killed? It just doesn't make any sense.
And I know it's part of the whole toxicity around every conversation, especially when you get these the tribalism and the need to justify, the need to say, like, well, but to be fair, and to find some glimmer where we aren't monsters. When the real work comes from saying, like, just in any kind of therapy, any kind of self-work, you need to be able to acknowledge the problem. That's, you know, like, we need to be able to see this if we want things to change.
Yeah, I don't know the accounts you're referring to, but I feel like I can safely assume that if Donald Trump were the president and it was the exact same situation, they would not be making that excuse.
Yes, 100%.
100%. Yes. Because, like you said, like, it's the tribalism. It's just the my team versus the other team. And I'm just like, if we're being fair, if whether it's Trump or Biden, this is a mistake, unlike unforgivable mistake that someone should be taking accountable for. But yeah, like you said, if it was Trump who did it, we now would, like, see so many articles about, like, we would now have pictures of every kid in that family and profiles about them and people talking about how nice they are and all of that. But now we're just like, well, maybe they were ISIS.
Exactly.
Do we know they were not ISIS?
Oh, man, exactly. Next piece of broken news.
This was a broken one. That was a broken one.
These are all broken, so it's okay for us to trail off at the end of each one because there's no wrapping them up in a nice bow. So this one, you know, a couple years ago, there was a 23-year-old black man named Elijah McClain who was killed by police in Aurora, Colorado. No one involved in that was charged at the time, but after social justice and racial justice protests last year, the governor of Colorado appointed a state attorney to re-examine the case, and a grand jury came down yesterday and charged 3 police officers and 2 paramedics with manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide. You know, these officers, they stopped Elijah McClain after he was walking home from a store. He was unarmed, you know, he was just walking home. A 911 caller said he looked suspicious, so okay. And then officers approached him. There was a verbal back and forth. The police placed Elijah McClain in a carotid hold, and then paramedics later injected him with ketamine. He died 6 days later after being removed from life support.
I, of course, am pleased with this development, that there is, you know, some movement going forward. That ketamine, did I just hear... Or I think I saw they're moving forward to, you know, ban ketamine, you know, use of from, the situation from being used. Yes. What?
Yeah. The
yes. Why was it ever allowed? Why is any of this? There's so much to unpack here besides the ketamine, but.
Yeah. Colorado passed some laws, some, you know, police reform laws in the last a year or so, but the Aurora Police Department keeps doing really bad things. About a month ago, two police officers from the same town were arrested for pistol whipping and holding a gun to the head of a 29-year-old black man named Kyle Vinson. They were responding to a trespassing report. They found he had a probation violation, and then they hit him, or one of the cops hit him with a pistol, whipped him a dozen times or something, and then the other officer was arrested for not intervening on Vinson's behalf based on a law that Colorado passed. Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah, so I think that's the best we have to say about this one, is that that's something.
Yeah. Cody?
It's very odd. It's something. It's very odd, you know, talking about these stories when they happen, and then 2 years, and then nothing happened, and then 2 years later, it's like, oh, by the way, it happened, but then the overall picture doesn't really change. These individual stories develop in a way where, okay, this officer is fired or they're going to prison or whatever, but like the stories keep happening.
No, because like I feel like what happens every time is that they pick like one case where like justice takes place, and then that case is used to be like, hey, the system works because this one case like reached what people want, like, and then just ignoring every other case where like no one has gotten justice. So yeah, just like one case every like every year, like one, like, you know, just to justify having these laws and these systems and all of it.
Yeah, regular reminder of like, oh, don't worry, things are going great actually.
Well,
yeah.
and a lot of times that works. Of like, a lot of people are like, see, change is happening. I can go about and tune out. But also, Cody, to your point of like, yeah, this thing happened, and now 2 years later, we're seeing some movement on it. Well, innumerable incidences have happened in the intervening time.
Yeah.
And continue to. And I look at this, so I see these are officers that were arrested for the assault, you know, and pistol whipping this other man. And that's good. But the first thing I say that's good. And then I think, what does that actually mean? Did they got arrested? What is that punishment? Do they lose their jobs? Are they still active officers? You know, that's a line in an article that we could look into more. But I say that's something. Do I believe that this is significant change? I don't. Not yet. But it's something.
Well, it's similar, Mahana, to what you were talking about with Afghanistan. Like we choose these moments to see justice in the most egregious possible cases, but then in other cases we still hear, well, like he was doing this, or the officers felt they were in danger. Like, you know, we're so much of this country is still looking for any kind of justification imaginable, and there's only justice in those situations where we've collectively decided that it was so egregious, you know, that like I don't think the discussion is still there yet where there's as much offense taken in every one of these police brutality cases as there should be. And it's only like we kind of cherry pick when it's like, well, this one was especially awful, and there we can't
if it
breaks
and through. it has to be all over the news. People need to talk about it needs to be on TV, needs to be mentioned so many times. And I think the reason it like gets there, because like everything that is publicized or like gets media attention, it has to reach a conclusion, because that's what people like. They need a happy, well, not a happy ending, but like an ending to it. So, but the other ones, like, you know, they're like, you know, who cares? People don't even know that this is happening. So why would we give anyone justice? Like, no one really cares.
They're banking on us forgetting and tuning out and letting it get swept up.
And then increasing funding for police. Sorry.
No, I know. One more broke news.
And this one's, well, I'll let you all decide how broken you think this is. Joe Rogan has COVID.
Okay.
He announced that he tested positive. He said, I'm going to just read this direct quote. It says, I threw the kitchen sink at it. All kinds of meds, monoclonal antibodies, ivermectin, Z-Pak, prednisone, everything. I also got an NAD drip and a vitamin drip, and I did that 3 days in a row. Here we are on Wednesday, and I feel great.
You know, I don't think him throwing the kitchen sink was a metaphor. I think it was an actual sink that someone threw.
I do too.
He had ivermectin in there.
Filling it up and just gobbled it all up.
He's like, I keep horse paste in there anyway. Might as well eat that.
All the best science is done by just like throwing as many solutions to a problem. And then you know what worked. Now we can look at the laundry list of things he put in his body and go, this is
yeah, that's called science.
Also, like, who else will be able to do that? People are just gonna like be able to throw the kitchen sink at this problem.
Joe Rogan has a lot of resources available to him. I'm guessing he hasn't talked about the 13-year-old boy who died of COVID suddenly in his home in Georgia.
Probably not.
I don't expect him to be talking about the seriousness of this disease as he uses his platform, but it really makes my blood boil watching, yeah, you know, people with... Yes.
And Jonathan, you pointed out in the talk, like, he has said more than once, I feel like, he's, like, regularly talked about how, like, it's not a big deal. He trusts his immune system to take care of this if it ever happens. Like, not, you know, I don't need to do this or this. You know, we're human beings.
But there he goes.
Take care of it. It's like, well, but then why do you take the dewormer?
Yeah.
If you weren't scared of it, yeah.
He's such an alpha male until he gets COVID, and then he's just mainlining sheep drench.
Yeah. I just don't even like fully believe him, really. I think someone actually paid him to advertise the shit, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, do you even have COVID? Like, I'm sure he's fully vaccinated. Like, these people are just fucking monsters.
I agree with you completely.
Yeah, like, prednisone, don't you need a prescription for that? He's just got prescription steroids hanging around.
Right on.
It is a steroid. I was prescribed it for my dog when he was sick. So.
Yeah, I had it years ago for like a respiratory infection, but I don't have any now, and
you
I wouldn't
prescribed
take it.
You don't just keep it on
doctor?
Hand.
A doctor prescribed it for you? Interesting.
We're winking on the Zoom right now.
Yeah. it's another one of those cases. You know, glad he's okay. Would prefer if nobody died from the disease that's going around, but it would be nice if he was a little more responsible about these kinds of things. Yeah. And I don't know, the ivermectin conversation is just like so frustrating to watch. The new move is now everyone's saying it's like a horse dewormer, but actually it also is for humans. Yeah, as a dewormer. Like, what do you like? It's not. What does it change? What does that change that you're using it to treat this virus? Nothing? Is it nothing? I don't know.
There are a few people out there who had to have inadvertently cured themselves of worms, who didn't know they had worms and have dewormed themselves. So, like,
100%,
there's a couple of good news.
Yeah. I mean, these people and their brain worms. Maybe that will work.
Maybe,
you know?
Down the line. Yeah, exactly. They'll change their tune because they took it. But, you know, and if a doctor prescribes you fucking ivermectin for your fucking COVID, great, take it. But guess what?
Yeah.
They're not for you. So.
Before we take a break, I want to just throw one little new news story out at you guys and get your quick take reaction, which is the story of how a COVID testing clinic, yes, in Colorado, denied Candace Owens on account of the fact that she spread so much disinformation. So Candace tried to schedule an appointment, and the woman was like, nah, you can go to this other place that doesn't take appointments, and they only have this window of hours, but we don't feel comfortable serving you because your disinformation and what you've done has caused so many other people, to fall victim to this. But then philosophically, you're also like, it's your duty to test the person that wants to get a COVID test who's going out there spreading germs potentially.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I mean, I'm surprised she's getting tested for a disease that does not exist.
I am too. There is that.
Yeah,
lovely
seems like a waste
piece.
Of time.
Yeah.
To test for that if it's not a real thing and not a problem. Why would she want to know? Even if she thinks it's real, why would she want to know? It's fine. You can spread it around and it won't cause a problem.
Exactly. But like, I'm like.
I think real talk. Literally take the test. Everyone should be able to take a test. Everyone should be able to take a test, get the vaccine. We don't want people to not know if they have it. We want people to know that they have it so that we can take care of each other. I mean, it's funny. I'm not going to pretend it's not very, very funny. But, you know,
I like
everyone should be able to have a test.
Her response back to the woman was, I wanted to let you know this might objectively be the most hilarious email I've ever received in my life. Truly, I've never laughed harder. She signs it, LOL, Candace Owens.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, I just love her response.
She's so constantly mad.
It's very funny, but yeah, it's the same thing as like, oh, we should charge people more for treatment if they didn't get vaccinated. Like, no, that's a terrible idea. It should be free for everybody.
Yeah, it's cruel. It's not
vindictiveness. Yeah.
Because, you shouldn't give them material. Like, Candace Owens, like, refusing to give her the test. You're just giving her, like, more ammo to just be like, it's actually not real, and that's why they don't want to test me for it, because I can tell. Blah. She just comes up with something. You know, just give her the test. If she has it, doesn't have it, and just don't think about her.
I also, I respect and appreciate the woman who denied her, I where your heart is, I respect you and relate to your anger. Maybe respect is the wrong word because we've just said, I think that she made the wrong choice, but you know, like I get it. I get it. And I'm glad that you hate her. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. I do want to read this quick tweet from her. She blocked me a long time ago, so I've not been really aware of these things unless someone points it out. Conservatives should not be allowed, just like a little tongue in cheek, conservatives should not be allowed to take COVID tests even when they are mandated. Rather, we should be given exemption cards. We are too indecent to be made to follow the COVID rules. And her last sentence is, no more testing for conservatives. Exempt us from this fake pandemic, please. If it's fake, why did you want to test, Candace? Like, it's literally, like, it's just wild that, like, she's saying it while she's complaining about it. Like, obviously, these people are so used to being able to say whatever they want weeks ago and be hypocritical the next week, and people point it out and it doesn't make any difference. But saying it when it's going on is just wild.
Bookmark this for a future Candace Owens episode if we ever do that.
Never again. We did the one.
Never again.
We're done.
I don't need to give her more attention. All right.
We'll do another one if she unblocks me. Unblock me, Candace. I know you're listening.
If and only if, Candace. We're coming for you. Yeah, she blocked me.
Actually,
don't
unblock
the show.
Me. That'll be really bad for my mental
health. She block the show, too? We'll find out.
Probably not.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back for even more news.
News. Nothing says it's time for an ad like this beginning of an ad or other beginnings of other ads. So thanks to Skillshare, the online learning community that offers membership with meaning, whatever that means to you. Skillshare empowers you to grow, learn, create, and explore via however you like to explore. Visually, audibly, thirdually. Advancing toward a goal can be achievable with 10,000 hours of practice, or with short lessons and hands-on projects for an undetermined number of hours, one hopes to be significantly less than 10,000. Learning by doing and watching your hard work pay off is very satisfying. Speaking of pay, you can pay Skillshare $10 a month for an annual subscription. And speaking of off, blast off to affordable classes compared to pricey in-person classes or workshops. But most importantly, snoof the doof. Or, more respectfully, Snoofle Doofle, the world-famous Some More News mascot, birthed via the power of Skillshare via a class called Simple Character Animation, Create a Walk Cycle with Duick via teacher Fraser Davidson. In way less than 10,000 hours, I learned how many hours I was wasting using After Effects inefficiently, changing keyframe after keyframe, frame by frame, instead of not that. Skillshare also has classes on video editing, productivity, playing music, and much more. So hey, hi, how's it going, ad-listening people who are listening to this right now? Why not explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/morenews and get a free trial of premium membership?
And we are back, as promised, for even more news.
More news.
Ooh, I'm not excited about this. It is time now for us to discuss the thing I have been dreading, which is the Texas abortion law. You guys all came here for this. I know it, for the hot takes.
Yeah.
I've been feeling really heavy today and yesterday. I've been feeling scattered and heavy. And I mean, life has been, everything's so intense lately, but this is hard because I don't know why. I always run up against my optimism hitting reality. And I know that this has been looming. I know that this was approaching and we've been talking about this potential for a long time, but in my heart, I didn't think it would come to this. You know, In my heart, I thought maybe whatever. It's foolish. It sounds foolish now, but it's, mm-hmm. and we'll see what happens. But I just have to give that caveat up top. And I know a lot of people listening feel the same way as I do. I know all the women in my life feel furious right now. As the only woman here, I just felt the need to say that up top.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. SB 8 went into effect in Texas on Wednesday. This is the law that effectively bans abortion after the 6th week of pregnancy, which, yes, obviously is too soon. That is before many women know they are pregnant. Jonathan gave us a statistic here. 85 to 90% of abortions take place after 6 weeks. And I can tell you from experience, 6 weeks is nothing. Again, as the only woman on the show right now. I tweeted this. I don't know if a lot of men know this, but you should. You know, our cycles are really irregular depending on stress, you know, whatever's happening, your diet, illness. So it's completely, completely within the realm of possibility that you could be 8-9 weeks pregnant and not know. A lot of people get diagnosed as pregnant at like 10 weeks. So yeah, 6 weeks is ridiculous.
And they know that. Like,
and they know that. Oh, yeah. They know that. Absolutely, they know that. And it was made purposefully difficult to challenge because it leaves enforcement of it up to individual citizens who are now allowed to sue healthcare organizations and doctors that provide abortions. This is from Sotomayor, who wrote in her dissension, In effect, the Texas legislature has deputized the state citizens as bounty hunters, offering them cash prizes for civilly prosecuting their neighbors' medical procedures. Another way that I would like to think about this is as a witch hunt, as going around reporting people, and you can do it anonymously. Anonymous tip line. You're shaking your head. Go ahead and interject whenever. There's lots to get through. Just chime in.
It's just like you hear people saying, like, I'm not going to show you that my vaccine status because these are like medical information. Mm-hmm. But at the same breath, trying and digging into other people's medical information to report them and also make money. And I'm just like, pick one. You can't have it both.
Right.
It's just insane to me. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yes. It's just like, I think honestly, like, that is one of the most insane part of that story. This law and this story, just like having people just go, like, basically snitch on other people and just make money. It's just insane. It's truly, I'm just like, this doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. How much would people get fined? I know 10,000 down here.
They get a $10,000 judgment if they bring a lawsuit and win. So the idea is that, yeah, a cop's not going to come and arrest you for providing an abortion, but you can be buried under dozens of lawsuits immediately. Even if you win them, you're paying legal fees. Like, you can't provide the care. Yeah.
It's
And it's intentionally done so there's no one to sue. Usually you can't sue a state. Usually you sue the enforcer of a law if you think a law is unjust. They've put this, which is why we went to the Supreme Court in the first place. Because there's like, no, you know, we need to stop this to figure out how to challenge it because legal challenges are tough. Who do you sue? A judge? There's different ways. They're like the ACLU is trying to figure it out, but it's intentionally trying to create a loophole to get around Roe v. Wade, and it worked.
With judges stacked against us, the likelihood of them ruling in favor of that feels slimmer. Yes to everything you just said. Also, you can be fined or sued. The Uber driver, whomever drives you to the clinic, it is...
That's fucked up.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very, very fucked up. We thought quickly about trying to get Rhiannon from 5-4 Pod on here. Maybe we'll reach out to have her break down some of this next week. However, I know that they are recording an emergency episode, so I'm definitely going to check that out. You know, I'm sure that they might have more information on how this breaks down and what potential options there are. So maybe we can circle around on that in the future, but it is not good. And like the Supreme Court, you know, could have blocked this law from taking effect. You know, they could have made it a part of the shadow docket. They should could have punted this, you know, could have ordered the district court to determine if it was unconstitutional, but they chose not to. And yeah. It feels like this is the real signifier
they got what they wanted.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing exactly what they were put in the court to do, really. It was just to make sure that these laws just pass. And I mean, they got what they wanted.
Right. And it makes it much easier for other states to continue down this path.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see what happens.
See which one's the next one, right?
I want to talk a little bit. I'm angry, obviously. I've already said that. And obviously, yes, this is the result of a long-term plan by conservatives. They've been slowly chipping away at this from different angles for a long time.
Yeah.
They've been building up conservative judges, stacking the Supreme Court. We know that. We also all knew that this was happening, and we all knew what was at stake and what we were building to. Especially all of our elected Democrats in office. And a lot of people say, like, well, not their fault. But also, what are we doing? They have let this happen. There is a series of mistakes and miscalculations. That's the best way you can even possibly frame it, is a series of mistakes that they have watched happen. And we've known this was coming now. Like, I'm going to read a little bit from this piece from Aaron Gloria Ryan. Biden's lack of action on this issue broke a promise he made to his voters. He campaigned on protecting Americans' right to abortion access from state-level attacks. He has promised over and over that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land and that as president, he would codify abortion rights at the federal level in order to protect them being further eroded at the state level. There was chatter that Biden would expand the Supreme Court in order to protect a conservative minority from stripping rights from women and shaping American law for the next 40 years. He didn't do that. Biden can't say he didn't see this coming. Texas's six-week abortion ban was signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott back in May. It was always going to go into effect on September 1st. Anyway, it goes on. But you get the point. She's right. And I do think that we can be angry. I think that... Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I'm just agreeing with you.
I've been ranting
for
a while.
No, rant away. I was just going to agree with you completely. Biden's a very sleepy man. He's tired. He's not necessarily plugged into everything. And just every step of the way, everything is expected. It's very frustrating to see things play out the way people said it would.
Yeah, I mean, it was the same thing with the, you know, like they had a day like they did with the Afghanistan exit. Like they knew what day this thing was going to happen, and they wait for that day to pass, and then the next day they just came, like Biden came out today and were just like, yeah, this is bad. And I'm like, yeah, the problem is you did this today. This should have been a week ago, 2 weeks ago. Like,
exactly.
You've been in office for a while. Yeah.
And like the
you
messaging. This. Okay, so let's talk. If you can't do, I mean, there's a lot of different things that I have thoughts on that I don't know if. Go ahead, Cody.
Oh, I mean, it's the same thing with like the eviction moratorium, things like that.
Yes.
Things that like people keep saying, like, this is going to happen soon. This is going to happen soon. This is going to happen soon. And then it happens. And they're like, we got to call on every citizen to. Call your representatives or whatever. It's like, fuck you, man. You are one.
And it's
one.
Like, this is why people lose faith in the Democrats. I posted about this and then deleted it because some people were...
Oh, you got to delete tweets. Especially... You can't keep tweets.
If this was on
Never,
Instagram,
yeah.
I dip my toe
that too.
In there every
delete
so
all your
often.
Posts. Never
it has
posts.
To be pictures. One friend of ours in particular was arguing with me, like, what could they have done? I'm like, literally anything. I mean, if you want to talk about messaging, yes, let's talk about it. Let's make it very clear what's at stake, what's happening, and who's to blame, and what we can do. Let's make sure everybody understands. Talking about the filibuster, you know, like, there's a lot of things that can be done, and maybe will start to be done, but...
It's just like,
well, right. Like if we write our representatives, as we're always encouraged to do, or call our representatives, we say, okay, I support expanding the Supreme Court, or I support getting rid of the filibuster and passing the Women's Health Protection Act. Those are the things that will stop this. Those
so
are the things
sure
we want.
Let's make sure to highlight that, in case people don't know, that is an option. Congress we've talked about the filibuster a lot, you know. The debate of eliminating the filibuster. But if they did, they could pass the Women's Protection Act, which would codify it at the federal level, correct?
Yeah, it would codify Roe v. Wade into law, and, you know, there's challenges and stuff, but that's it, done deal.
And Nancy Pelosi, I guess, says that they will vote on this.
Yeah, we'll the see. House is going to vote on it, the Senate.
But yes, right now it's very bad.
I am just incredibly frustrated at all, because, like, you know, just being like, no, we have to win the Senate. No, we have to win the House.
Right.
No, we have to win the presidency. I'm like, you literally won all of those.
All three!
And you still can't get anything done. And it's just like, you're telling me that you can't get it done because, you know, you still need more people or whatever. But how are Republicans getting things done?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. We did our part.
Yeah.
We got you into you fucks.
There's no long-term strategy with them. It's always sort of a reaction to events, right?
Exactly.
A bad thing happens. We got to fundraise. Give us the money and so we can win this election, and then we can do something about it. And then the cycle sort of continues.
Yeah, and it's always an election year. Like, no, we're always moved by the fear of losing and not winning, wanting anything.
Right.
We just don't want Republicans to win. That's it. That's the whole thing. And
you
as much as
Well, I mean, the Democrats are in a way terrified of winning, because if they win, they have to do something.
Right.
Exactly.
And they're running out of places. They're running out of places to move the goalposts.
This week, along those lines, it feels like every fight isn't about what we deserve or should have. It's about trying to not have things taken away.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying not have money and rights and healthcare and access and they want to take it. They want.
Yeah, it's anyway. That's the constant message. Sorry.
No, this is, we're going to move on to talking about climate change in a moment, like I teased earlier, but this is very dystopian.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about how within our lifetimes, food shortages and different, climate change disasters, how that affects our farming, all of it. How in 20 years, they're going to care very much, very much about how many babies we're producing.
Yeah, and then it'll happen, and they'll be like, it happened. You gotta give us some money to save you. It's always conditional. It's always this sort of like, we're not them. They're trying to do the bad thing. So we will stop them from doing the bad thing. We won't offer really much of anything. Or like fight in the way that they fight to get the things that they want. And
it's crazy. I'm just like, I wish Democrats would be like Republicans, but for good.
Yes, you know? Yes.
Like, lie and cheat your way. I don't care what you do. Just do good things. Do it in a shady way. I don't care.
Show us you believe in doing good things for people.
Yeah.
Dicks for Good is a good platform. Like, we'll be dicks for good.
Yeah.
I would.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, like, half the stuff they say they want to do, they don't really want to do.
Well, they don't believe it anyway.
And, exactly. And then, you know, there's also just that, like, constant fear for them of, like, well, if we do too much, then we'll lose our hold on. Like, they'll lose. They're worried about losing office, too. But incorrectly, in my view at least, that because if they do good things, people will be like, wow, they did a good thing that I like. I will vote for them more.
I say this so often. Lots of people say this so often. The voters that they want to appeal to. How about the voters who don't vote because they don't believe in anything?
Many people
believe that
vote.
Any government person is out for, has their best interest. Government person, elected official. That's the word.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because they are, you know, I'm not going to say they're the exact same party because one is like very clearly like leaning into the silliest version of American fascism you can like imagine. but they, in a lot of ways, they are. They're there to protect a certain class of people and certain interests in different ways. And, you know, there are differences there, but in a lot of ways there aren't. And
Yeah,
like saying,
yeah.
Like, go get people who don't vote, like convince them that you're worth anything.
Right.
People are disillusioned. That's why they don't vote. They look at both parties and say, well, I voted for Reagan. He didn't do anything for me. I voted for Bush and then I voted for Clinton. I tried both parties and they didn't do shit. So I'm not going to vote anymore. And I'm still like, I still think it's good to at least get some people in office who at least somewhat agree with what like your views, but I do really sympathize with people who are just completely disillusioned with the whole thing.
Yeah, of course.
It sucks.
With our last remaining beautiful, precious minutes here in this podcast space, let's talk about disaster fatigue.
No.
A nice
what
light note.
To?
Yes. All right. Lots of disaster news this week. Hurricane Ida, of course. Talked about this briefly in Worst Year Ever this week. Okay, like Robert mentioned, I'll start off with a positive, which is that the levees held. So that's good in most places, maybe not in the smaller coastal towns. There was a lot of flooding there. But it is a big contrast to Hurricane Katrina. Even if this was a stronger hurricane and there was less water that, you know, was drawn up and blown inland, but the winds were faster. Mm. However, this isn't just some success story. I want to highlight the fact that it's a humanitarian crisis there as well. There's lots of destruction. Currently, what is this? Over 1 million people do not have power.
Is that a lot?
It's coming back on
very
slowly.
Without water. It is a heat wave. It's incredibly hot there. I was listening to one interview with the man. It's just poor, low-income communities that never really recovered from Katrina either. But there was an interview with this one man who, you know, his car was in the shop, didn't have a safe place to shelter, has a dollar in his pocket because he's surviving on food stamps, but none of the places have power to take his food stamps. This is the story of a lot of people right now. So when we talk about this, we have to, this is the reality of it, you know, and also people, there's a whole conversation to be had about people moving away from these communities that regularly have disasters. Like this will lead to mass exodus. So of course that's Hurricane Ida. There are so many news. There's highway collapsed, you know, that killed 2 people and injured 10 more in Mississippi. Then, of course, there's New York last night, like what you experienced.
Yeah.
This is the very first flash flood emergency that the state of New York has ever had. 25 people are dead after flash flooding in New York City last night. And if anybody's surprised by that, how we've been talking about this happening around the world in China and Germany. Then there's the California wildfires.
I mean, yeah, it's just like what you got the fires, you got your tornadoes, you got your hurricanes, you got your floods.
You got your hurricanes. The whole
waiting for that super volcano.
Waiting for that super volcano, but I don't want to blow over this Tahoe thing. There's 23,000 people that live in Tahoe. So many structures are threatened. You know, hundreds of homes have already burned. 53,000 other people remain in evacuation orders in all of Northern California. The entire California National Forest has been shut down through the 17th just to prevent fires, which is tough, but good. It's a crisis. We all know this. I'm running through all of this because it's important to note
that quote from the Cal Fire chief stunned
the quote. I know. Where is that? I was just looking. Here it is. Yes, this quote chilled me to the bone, and it circles back around to that conversation we had up top, which is, there is fire activity happening in California that we have never seen before. The critical thing for the public to know is evacuate early. For the rest of you in California, every acre can and will burn someday in this state. That hit me hard, because it's true.
Yeah.
We could buy Greenland and move to Greenland.
We could buy Greenland. But Jonathan pitched this topic, and I think it's a great idea, which is the topic of disaster fatigue. Sorry, Cody, go ahead.
I mean, no, it's, I wouldn't add anything other than like feeling bad about the things knowing we could do stuff about it, but probably won't, but could. Well, like one point, I think, like we were talking about the levies and stuff and how they held to a good extent. And it's the kind of thing that we're doing an infrastructure episode on some more news in the coming days. So stay tuned for that. And one thing we hit on is, like, with the levies, it's good that we reinforced those and they held. We wait until things break before we fix them.
We had to experience Katrina for that to happen.
Like, all these things are happening. We know that this is going to get worse and worse. We know what we need to do. It really won't happen until it happens.
Yeah.
And then instead of, like, even incremental change, like, improve these over the years, improve this, it's just wait till it breaks and then we'll fix it.
Right.
I mean, it's like you said, you know, like, it's been happening in other countries. Like, not just climate change, like, all of these problems, like, the U.S. is facing now. But a lot, like, I feel like people and the government itself, like, cannot, I don't know why they do not, like, see anything outside of just, like, a U.S. lens. Like, this is happening to another place. It can't happen to us. Like, you know, floods and whatever, like, whatever other country. It's always, like, you know, it's always bad management or, you know, third world countries being backwards, whatever. It's their fault. And then something like this happens in New York yesterday and be like, oh, I guess the climate is really changing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, right. Don't you watch anything that's happening outside?
I mean, it's
not like, yeah, it's not like, oh, it's a third world city, so, like, of course it's going to go bad.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's what, I had this conversation with a friend, a very well-informed friend, but yes, I'm going to circle back around to disaster fatigue because you start to put blinders on. You can't absorb everything, all the information that's happening, all of the tragedy that's happening. And I was talking about flooding and climate change, and they're like, well, that wouldn't happen here, though. I'm like, it happened in China. It happened in, you know, like, a flash flood happened in a subway tunnel. Like, it can and it will, and then it did, you know?
It's happening on the planet. Like, America didn't pick, we found the good spot on the planet.
Right.
We're safe here.
And I don't share that to shame somebody. I share that to say, like, yes, there's too much happening. And bring it, disaster fatigue. I'm reading from our notes here. Some researchers have even tried to classify disaster fatigue as a form of emotional exhaustion that can alter how people address threats. They theorize that the more threats are apparent at any given moment, people will address what appears to be the biggest crisis at the moment and are likely to get numb to dangers at a certain point and just kind of give up. Mm-hmm. The anxiety and PTSD caused by living through repeated disasters is actually a well-known psychiatric condition called learned helplessness, a condition where a person suffers from a sense of powerlessness arising from a traumatic event or persistent failure to succeed. I think that we probably feel that a lot collectively here in America, especially on the progressive side of
it. I think the left is just like a case study in just learned helplessness.
Yeah, but I feel this happening and I see this happening. Yeah.
You know, it's like it's a defense mechanism at a certain point. So the first thing of like, I don't, you know, I have the same thing. I see a disaster happen in a place and I'm like, well, there's not a lot of forest where I live in LA. So that probably won't happen to me. Well, I live at this elevation so that like it's the first place you go to. This probably won't happen to me. This probably won't happen to me. It's the only way you can make sense of the unpredictability and cacophony of the world. And I do think. The left is living in this sense of like learned helplessness where we see all these things and it is very, very hard to generate a sense that like your small actions can make a difference. I'm not even just talking about like donating. I'm talking about just like being a good person and trying to stay an optimist and it's hard.
Because at the end of the... Right. It's like, oh, we've been told to recycle. Well, that was a lie. Mohanad, it looks like you had something to say.
No, I mean, the thing is, like, this is the expected result that, you know, like corporate media and like the government and everyone been like companies or like everyone like been pushing. to get you to the point where like you get to this despair and you're like, because like if you think that nothing can be done, they can continue to do what they're doing because it can be fixed. You know, like if it can't be fixed, let us make money then and shut up. Like you can't do anything about it. And do I feel helpless? Absolutely. Yeah. I'm like, this shit sucks. I'm like, I don't know what to do most of the time. But I honestly try to remind myself not to get to the point where I'm like completely give up.
We can't.
I like to believe in some just part of my brain that like these things can eventually be fixed. I don't know how. I don't know who can fix them. But I try not to get to the point where I'm just like, it's done. It's over. It's like 5 years from now, it's just irreversible and we're gone in like 20 years.
I don't feel like I'm done until I've died. Mm-hmm. You know, like. Yeah.
Well, and the answer is Elon Musk is going to fix all of this. Clearly.
Elon Musk, like, I really, really wish one of these billionaires.
Yeah, that's clearly what you were getting at.
Yeah, whole segment is about billionaires are going to suck the carbon out of the atmosphere.
I think about it. Like, just come up with something brilliant here. Some fucking technology, save the world and we'll like you.
I will change my tune on Elon Musk if he comes up with a carbon sucking machine that works and isn't just a sucking machine, which
it's
is
called trees
that he builds.
Yeah,
trees.
It's just like, I mean, yeah, I don't think the frustrating thing is like there's this sort of waiting for like, oh, maybe he'll like they'll invent this thing or this thing or like this will save us. Technology isn't going to save us. We know what we need to do. We need to reduce emissions and like there's like so many things that are actionable.
Can't they maybe they could make a technology to reduce emissions.
I believe that's called legislation. The technology of legislating. And it's just, yeah, it's just very frustrating because also, like, I don't know if I'm sure people saw last night that video of the person delivering Grubhub amidst the thing. And it's like, that's like, it's not gonna, like, many people will be quote unquote fine. Things aren't things will continue because people still have to keep making money, right? Companies will continue. Like, they know that they don't have to make changes to how we do things because even in a fucking flood, business is booming, right? So they don't really have even an incentive to do anything because they know no matter what, climate change or no climate change, they'll be fine.
And you know someone's like, I'm going to tip 8% on this Grubhub tonight.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Like, unbelievable ordering Grubhub in that. Just like, literally just like, what you have, you have something in your fridge. If you're ordering Grubhub, you have something.
I know.
To
I
eat.
Was like, who did
eat
that?
A fucking cracker? My God. I don't know. It's just very frustrating. And tech billionaires ain't going to save us. We will, though. We'll save ourselves when things, I don't know, just when things get really bad.
Well, hopefully it gets to a point where it's just not, like you said, it's not just the left. Because, you know, like you have a lot of people who are like in the center of it who are not helpless because they actually think this is the best they could do. And this is, you know, it's just the lack of imagination of a better future and thinking that every other place on the planet is like here. And like we have it best here and this is good. At least we're not, I don't know, just like name some other country. And I'm like, yeah, I think some other countries are doing pretty well. They've passed that point, and they have imagination, and we need that,
right? Yeah,
if we can
imagination and
that.
The political will to do it. That's exactly. Another thing, like major thing is missing.
I think AOC pointed out that there were a bunch of subway systems that had to be upgraded after they got damaged in Hurricane Sandy, and those ones held up really well.
Yeah,
last night, like if we can just find the political will to invest up front. And, you know, it's a mixture of prevention and at this point adaptation. Like we can't get away adapting to a new climate, but like we have the money and the ability to change things to make it so people don't suffer when these things happen. We can do it. We're just not doing it.
Right.
Well, guys, this has been a really fascinating, depressing, but good conversation. It's been so wonderful chatting with you. Please come back literally anytime.
Anytime on a Thursday.
Honestly,
okay. And when we don't have another guest book,
can you please tell us a little bit about your podcast and where to find you online?
Yeah, well, you can find me online at Mahana Dil Shaky. You just go to the description of this podcast and just copy paste it. Don't try to write it yourself. I also have a podcast called I'm Sorry, which, as you can tell, is about apologies and, you know, public apologies and like the what comes after them and the backlash and the whole culture around them, or just like, you know, every week getting into something and really like dissecting it and talking about it and just seeing like, you know, hopefully trying to be better people eventually at the end of every episode, even though I cannot promise that. I can promise that it would be entertaining and funny. And it comes every Friday.
Well,
and
I
can listen to it anywhere.
Think that sounds awesome, and I will definitely be checking it out and listening to it everywhere.
Thank you so much.
On all of the platforms simultaneously.
Thank you. And other than that, one last thing. If you want to see my stand-up comedy, people listening, I'll be in Philly headlining the Punchline on October 27th. If you're like, wow, would love to see this guy talk for an hour and tell jokes, you can do that then and there at 8 p.m.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Deal.
On my way.
On our way right now.
Are we all going to Philly in October, you guys?
Okay, guys, that's it for us this week. You can follow us online at Some More News. And just in case you forgot, in case you need a reminder, want to make sure that you know, we love you very much.
Much.